Hello, welcome to the Beach House 34 podcast. I'm your host, Christine Wirth. I want to welcome all of the new subscribers and give a huge shout out to all of the loyal listeners. Thank you so much for being a part of this journey. Before we get started, I know I've said this before, but this episode is a continuing series on the trial readings for the case of Darlie Routier. And if you don't know, Darlie Routier was a mother in 1996 who was accused of and convicted of murdering her children in Rowlett, Texas. And the reason I say children is because two of her children were killed, but she was only tried for the youngest of them. She currently sits on death row in Texas. Now, this case is not as simple as you may think it is. If you're interested in hearing the true crime episode about her case, which covers everything, you can find that in episode number 33, and I will have the link for that below in the show notes. And as soon as all of these trial readings are done and everything associated with the trial is finished, I'll be back to doing weekly true crime and paranormal cases. So thank you all. And let's get on with the next trial reading, which is Robert Poole, who is a firearm and tool mark examiner. And his testimony is actually quite short. So we're going to go ahead and get into that right away. His questioning is begun by a member of the prosecution, which we don't hear from often, but it's Miss Sherry Wallace. And she begins with, "How are you employed, Mr. Poole?" "I'm employed by the Institute of Forensic Sciences in Dallas, also known as the Dallas County Crime Laboratory." "What I think the jurors have heard it referred to is SWIFTS?" "Yes, ma'am, that's correct." "You work in the crime lab portion of that building?" "I do, ma'am, yes." "What job title do you have?" "I am a firearm and tool mark examiner." "What is your educational background and experience that qualifies you to hold that position?" "I have a master's degree from Boston University, but my technical training came as a result of my active duty service in the U.S. Army. In 1975, when I was on active duty, I was selected for and subsequently went to the U.S. Army Crime Laboratory System, where I was enrolled in a 2-year course in firearm and tool mark identification. I completed that formal training in 1977. And I was then, at that time, certified by the Department of the Army as a firearm and tool mark examiner. And I did that work almost exclusively until I retired from active duty in 1992 to accept the position that was offered to me in Dallas. And so, you have been doing this work for about 20 years. Is that about right? "Yes, ma'am. A little over 20 years. Have you been published and have you taught as well on this subject?" "I have." "Okay. If you would, tell the members of the jury what a tool mark is." "A tool mark is really, in a forensic sense, that is, in doing the kind of work that I do, is essentially two objects that come into contact with one another. And the harder of the two has the opportunity or the ability to leave its characteristics on the softer of the two. And tool marks can include a variety of things and substances. For example, common tools that you and I know might include screwdrivers, bolt cutters, wire cutters, pliers. Those kinds of things are traditional tools that are used in burglary investigations. And those are the kinds of things that I would commonly come in contact with and do tool mark analysis. But a tool can be essentially anything that is harder than the object on which it is acting and then leaves its marks on the softer of the two. "About how many tool marks have you examined, Mr. Poole?" "Over the course of my career, I have examined thousands of tool marks." "Let me ask you if you were asked to do that sort of testing in this type of case." "Yes, I was." "I am going to show you what's been admitted into evidence as State's Exhibit 1A. Outside the jury's presence, did I ask you to look at that picture?" "Yes, ma'am." "Could you step down, please?" "Were you given a portion of Devin Routier's chest plate to test?" "Yes, ma'am, I was." "On State's Exhibit 1A, Would you show the jury on this photograph what area you were given? The medical examiner's office submitted a portion of the chest plate that would have included these two major cut areas, and it was perhaps as much as 3 inches around those two marks. The chest plate itself, that was sent over to the laboratory. So you were actually given the bone and the cartilage of that plate? Yes, ma'am. Okay. Once you got that, how do you go about testing markings on that chest plate? Well, the initial problem that I am faced with is being able to get to the markings if, in fact, there are any there. So what I have to do is I have to cut out a section of the rib, the section of cartilage that has the stab wound in it, in this case. Once I have cut the plug, I am then interested in looking at and seeing if I can detect anything in the way of tool marks on the actual rib bone, on the cartilage that makes up the rib bone itself. And so, after having cut the plug, I then expose the portion of the rib where the instrument would have gone through, and I look at it microscopically to see if there is anything there. Did you find anything in the two holes in Devin Routier's chest plate? I found significant tool marks in the lower of the two. The upper one, though it is damaged and the damage is obvious, there were no tool markings there that I could use to identify the instrument that might have done it. Mr. Poole, when you realized in the lower hole that you had sufficient tool marks to do some analysis, were you also given some weapons, some tools? I was. Let me show you what has been admitted into evidence as the Guzman, the knives, found around the Guzman home, numbers 21 and 22, and ask you if you received those. Yes, ma'am, I did. Did you examine those knives to determine if they made the wound in Devin Routier? Yes, ma'am, I did. And what was your conclusion? That these knives can be excluded. That is, that these knives did not make at least one of the cuts in the chest plate of the young of Devin. So those knives did not cause that hole. Is that what you're telling us? That's correct. Now, State's Exhibit 67, were you also asked to examine the weapon found in the Routier kitchen? I was. And did you have an opportunity to compare that as well to the breastplate, the hole in Devin Routier? I did. What was your conclusion with that? My conclusion was that the characteristics of the damage that was present on the cartilage was similar to the test marks that I received in making stabs with this knife. However, I was not able to conclusively determine that this was the knife that was used, but my opinion would be that a knife with similar characteristics, specifically a knife that would have perhaps smooth areas in between some serrations. That is the kind of instrument that would have been used, in my opinion. So what you're saying is that these knives found in the Guzman home didn't do it, and that weapon number 67 is the same class characteristics? Mr. Mulder then says, object to the leading. Ms. Sherry Wallace continues, is that right? Mr. Mulder says, object to the leading. The court says, overruled, overruled. Let's phrase our questions right. Ms. Sherry Wallace continues, is that what you are saying? That's correct. All right. Ms. Sherry Wallace then says, pass the witness. And then the cross-examination is begun by Mr. Mulder. Just a thing or two, Mr. Poole. You examined, I take it, both of those wounds, did you?
I did, sir. Yes.
Would we be safe in assuming that in the course of the thoroughness of your examination, you discussed those wounds with the autopsying physician?
I did not, sir.
You did not?
No, sir.
Okay. I was going to ask you then if you had an opinion within your field of expertise as to whether or not the child was standing, sitting, or lying down at the time that those injuries were inflicted. Ms. Sherry Wallace then says, Your Honor, I'll object to that. He said that he didn't have the discussion. The court then says, overruled. I'll let him answer if he knows. The witness says, I have no opinion as to the position of the victim at the time of the stabbing. Mr. Mulder continues, okay.
Just out of curiosity, when were you asked to do this analysis? My involvement was perhaps a week or maybe a week and a half before Christmas. In December? Yes, sir. In December. Okay. And if I understood you correctly, you were saying basically that the lower wound, you can't tell whether it was made by that serrated bladed knife or not? My answer is with regard to this knife specifically, and the question being, is this the knife that did that? And my answer would be, I don't know. So you can't tell us anything, really? I can't tell. Well, I know that it is a knife with characteristics like this knife, but I cannot determine whether or not it is this knife or not. Could you tell whether or not both punctures, both injuries, both stab wounds were made by the same instrument? No, sir, because the upper wound didn't have any of those characteristics that I could use to discriminate the characteristics of the instrument that was used. Okay, I take it then your answer is that the stab wounds, as you examined them, are consistent with being inflicted by separate, different weapons? No, sir, I'm not saying separate or different. The one has no characteristics that I could use to make any kind of judgment other than it's there. And the second one did have an abundance of markings that allowed me to identify the class or the style of the instrument that was used. But I cannot determine whether or not this was the specific instrument used. And you can't tell us whether these knives or knives like these could have been used to make the upper injury. That's correct, sir. I don't have any idea about the instrument that was used to make the upper one. So, are you saying that these knives then could have been used to make the higher of the two injuries? Those knives and any other instrument capable of penetrating. You know, I notice with interest that, see if you notice this. You notice that these wounds are made at different angles? Yes, sir. What does that tell you that the person inflicting the wound to make this one, and then if you were going to stab there, you would have to do that. So to stab like that with a knife held like that, you would change your position or the body would change its position or you could change the manner in which you were holding the knife? Sir, there are a tremendous number of variables. First of all, in stabbing situations, very seldom, it has been in my experience, does the victim remain stationary? Well, that depends on the victim and it depends on the person inflicting the injuries. Is that not correct? There are a tremendous number of areas that enter into the characteristics. I mean, you would expect injuries, perhaps, if you and I were involved, you with that knife and me with this knife, than you would if either of us were involved with a child. Well, I think these circumstances would dictate an awful lot of that, sir. Whether or not we were both conscious, whether or not we would, I mean, there's just a tremendous amount of variables that enter into what occurs during that kind of incident. I guess there isn't anything in your vast range of experience that would permit you to speculate as to how many assailants were involved in these injuries? No, sir, I wouldn't care to speculate. Did you examine the injuries to the other child? No, sir. You weren't asked to examine injuries to the other child? That's correct, sir. Okay, who called you about this? I was first brought into this aspect by Mr. Lynch, one of our trace evidence analysts. Okay, Mr. Mulder says, I believe that's all. Thank you, Mr. Poole. And then Miss Sherry Wallace begins her redirect. Mr. Poole, that knife, is it still there in front of you? It's here on the side. States Exhibit Number 67. Could that knife have caused both wounds to Devin Routier? It could have. The court says, anything else? All right. Thank you, sir. You are excused, subject to recall. You may return to Dallas. The witness says, thank you. And the court says, all right. The next witness. So essentially what we've learned from this testimony of Robert Poole is that there were two injuries that he was asked to look at. And one of the injuries left nothing, so he wasn't really able to examine it whatsoever. Another injury could have or could not have been made by the knife coming from the Routier home. Now, what I found was interesting is that they also had knives there from the Guzman home. And way back towards the beginning, there was an episode, and I will have that for you in the show notes, where the neighbor, it's kind of a neighbor in the alley of the Routier's home. There were knives in the yard of this particular house, and they had said that, well, they had been using them for gardening. By the time the police went over to the house to grab these knives, they had already taken them out of the garden, and they had already washed them, and they were already back in their places within the Guzman home kitchen. But somehow, evidently, they figured out that it was these two particular knives that they had there, or that they had brought to Robert Poole in order to use to test on the stab wounds themselves. Now, I don't know how they determined that they were the same knives that were sitting out in the yard, because they didn't grab them at the same time. They looked at them. They didn't do anything with them. And I specifically remember this episode because I was kind of dumbfounded that around the area of a crime scene, there just happens to be knives in a yard, and they don't, the Rowlett police doesn't do a thing with them. Essentially, what we learned from Robert Poole is that he can't really determine one way or the other if it was actually the knife from within the Routier home that actually made these markings. So, which probably explains why his testimony is so short. He really doesn't have a whole lot to offer, at least nothing 100% definitive. So anyhow, in the next episode, we're actually going back to hear from Judith Floyd. We've already heard from her once, but it was really kind of just an organizational meeting, for lack of a better term. It was outside of the presence of the jury, just trying to get all of their numbers straight and so forth. But this time, she's actually giving her testimony based on the t-shirt and stabs and everything, and the blood spatter and everything that was on Darlie's shirt. So that will be in the next episode, and we will talk with you then. Thank you, thank you, thank you.